Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Justin. I'm the executive pastor, and I'm so glad that you're here as we kind of get to kick off a new series. And everybody that's watching online, thanks so much for joining us. We know that many people check it out online before they ever set foot here, so we look forward to meeting you. And we know that people are watching from all the places all around the globe as maybe they've been relocated by the military. So thanks for watching. And what we're starting today, and I'm so excited about this, is a new series called Legacies of Faith. And the heart of this series is really designed is for this. We want to look at great men and women of faith throughout the entire Bible who put their leadership on the line. And they left a legacy of faith. And ultimately, I believe, it's my belief, that our legacies are reflected in the stories that you and I leave behind. Our legacies are reflected in the stories that we leave behind. In the spirit of that, let me share a particular story. Let me take you back to 11th grade Justin. Okay. Yeah. 11th grade Justin, I was in American Studies class, and there was this girl that I sat next to, and I wanted to ask her out. I wanted to ask her to win her formal, and I thought, let me go ahead and do this in a very grand gesture kind of way. Right? So we had this essay prompt in the class, and they had the opportunity, and so instead of writing about the essay prompt, I wrote a 5-paragraph essay using all the evidence and gave this girl reasons for going with me to winter formal and for going out with me. Now, as if that wasn't, like, they give you the option of reading it out loud in class, so I did. Now, so there was some courage, but not, when I was doing it, I realized that my first and only concern was this, and it was just shows you how naive I was. I can fail this and still get a B in the class. That's the only thought that I had. I can fail this and still get it. And sure enough, I did. The teacher wrote me a really sweet note on the back page. It's kind of like, this is really well written, but you get a zero because this is what we told you to do. I was like, fair enough. But I get up and I read it, and nowhere in my mind did I think, what if she says no? And I'm reading this in front of 60 people, right? This grand gesture. Now, here's the thing. The girl on the right, that is my wife. So zero or no, I think I made the right decision. I told Eileen, that's my wife's name, I told her that I was going to share this story, and she's like, do you want the essay? I have it in a scrapbook I made for you. And I was like, oh! She's like, you could read a little bit if you want. I was like, no, thank you, honey. But that's a picture of it, right there, okay. And she made it in a scrapbook, and she gave it to me, and it was just funny. But here's the thing that I want to say. When you and I exercise courage, courage creates stories. Courage creates stories. Now, this is a story of the romance of me and my wife that I get to pass on to my kids, whether they want to listen to it or not. And so while this particular story takes a little bit of courage, it doesn't really hold a candle to this other guy I'm going to tell you about. There's a pastor, his name's Ryan Leake. He's at Covenant Church in Dallas, and he also makes documentaries. He's a film director as well, and his story's pretty cool. So the way his story plays out, He learned that his girlfriend wanted to get engaged and married on the same day. So he did something that I would recommend not many men do. He planned the entirety of the wedding before he ever proposed. We're going to talk about no going back. Everything. He got a wedding dress, makeup, hair person. He invited and flew out her whole family, picked the venue, all of this stuff. And then at the very end of it, he realized that she had a blog detailing all the things that he had been trying to find out for months. He's like, oh, crud, that would have been so helpful. So he goes out on a limb and he does this. They're engaged for 8 hours. They get married. It's a really cool thing. He turns it into a documentary called The Surprise Wedding. It goes viral on YouTube. Pretty cool story so far. It gets cooler. His story gets told on the Queen Latifah show. Because it goes viral, they invite him out there. And on the show, he gets to meet Kobe Bryant, who's like, I saw your video. I love your story, man. Kobe Bryant, right, famous NBA basketball player, LA Lakers, says like, hey, I loved it so much, I'd love to get dinner with you, and I'd love to invite you out to a game and just enjoy the weekend with me in the press box. And so, you know, Ryan Leake was like, oh my goodness, this is, and what do you talk to Kobe Bryant about, you know? It's like you're having dinner. It's like, oh, I played basketball. You play basketball. We both play basketball. You know what I mean? Like, well, how's that conversation going to go? So anyways, so he goes out on a limb, meets him, and he decides he's going to tell Kobe Bryant about this documentary idea he has about trying out for professional basketball teams. Ryan Leake used to be a pretty good, kind of like high school and college player, but not NBA good, the way he tells the story. This is all his story. But so Kobe Bryant's like, you should do that. That's an amazing idea. He's like, oh, no, I'm on the hook. I told Kobe Bryant I was going to do this. So he emails all these NBA teams, right? Because the story, this all started because he exercised some courage. He emails all these teams. The Boston Celtics reply and said, we're not really about that. And all the other teams kind of follow suit, except for one team, the Phoenix Suns. They invite him out to try out, and for 2 days, he's a Phoenix Sun. And at the very end, he's like, I can't keep going. They're like, we know. He's like, just keep going until you throw up in the garbage can. So he didn't make the team. He got cut. But what he says, and I think it's so powerful, he says this. He says, when I look back, courageously chasing failure got me farther than playing it safe ever did. See, and I share this all to say it's courage that creates stories. Courage that creates stories. And if legacies are reflected in the stories that you and I leave behind, then I want to be a people of courageous faith, because courageous faith shapes the stories that we build our legacies upon. Courageous faith shapes the stories that build our legacies. And so every story we're going to talk about today, or not today, but this whole series, Legacies of Faith, is going to come from a particular book of the Bible, Hebrews chapter 11. And if you don't know it, that's okay. It's in the New Testament. And this chapter is often referred to as kind of like the Hall of Fame of Faith. But it goes through this long list of great men and women of faith and characteristics and their stories. And it describes what about their faith was so awe-inspiring. And the character we're going to look at that comes from Hebrews 11, his name is Joshua. And Joshua was a man who exercised a tremendous amount of courageous faith. But along the way, he faced down some enemies. So I really want to share his story. I want to share with you two enemies, and I want to share with you two weapons that he put on to defeat those enemies. And ultimately, have a courageous faith that would shape the story that he would build his legacy upon. So Joshua is the sixth book of the Old Testament, and actually Hebrews mentions him pretty quickly, but the story of Joshua is found in the book of Joshua. So that's a pretty easy one to find. It's the sixth book. Let's go ahead and go there and let's dive in. We're going to start right at the beginning of the book, okay? And the first phrase kind of sets the whole tone. It says this, after the death of Moses, the Lord's servant, the Lord spoke to Joshua, son of Nun, who had served Moses. Moses, my servant, is dead. This is what God says. Now you and all the people prepare to cross over the Jordan to the land I am giving the Israelites. I have given you every place where the sole of your foot treads, just as I promised Moses. No one will be able to stand against you as long as you live. I will be with you, just as I was with Moses. I will not leave you or forsake you. It's a lot of emphatic language, a lot of promises there. Be strong and courageous, for you will distribute the land that I swore to their fathers to give them as an inheritance. Above all, be strong and very courageous to carefully observe the whole instruction my servant Moses commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or the left, so that you will have success wherever you go. Haven't I commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Let's pause here for a moment. Whenever you and I have our time and place, whenever we spend time in the Word, we always want to start with the question, what do I see? Right? That observation. We can ask the questions, what does it mean, or what does it mean for my life? But the first question, and one of the critical ones, is what do I see? And when I ask that question, what do I see, you also want to look for what is repeated in the text. And I see a phrase repeated a whole bunch. Do you see it with me? It's this phrase like, be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. Be strong and very courageous, just in case we weren't clear. Right? God's call to strength and courage like 4 times in 3 verses. And then I ask myself, why? Okay, that's what I observe. It's clear that God wants to get that across to Joshua. And then I ask the question, why? Why is it there? It all goes back to that first phrase, after Moses died. This first phrase sets the tone for the book. This first phrase sets the tone for Joshua's story. And ultimately, this phrase sets the tone for Joshua's legacy. Because if you don't know anything about Moses, they were big boots for a person to fill. Moses is pretty much like that action figure that has a ton of accessories. Let me tell you a little bit about Moses' story. Moses has a staff. He throws it on the ground. It turns into a stick. Sometimes he hits that stick against a rock and water spews out. He's got this special pocket in his coat. When he puts his hand in, it turns into leprosy. And for a dark-skinned Middle Eastern man with a bright white hand, that is just creepy. But he's able to do that. He goes, Moses does. This is who Joshua's taken over for. Moses goes to the most powerful man on the planet, Pharaoh, and says, hey, you know your whole slave system that props up your economy? I'm taking all 2 million with me. Oh, you are? Okay. But then, by the power of God, Moses summons 10 plagues on the nation of Egypt. Eventually, Pharaoh says, get out of here, go. So the people of Israel go. Then Pharaoh chases them, and they get to the Red Sea. Moses spreads his hand out across the waters, and by the power of God through him, he parts the Red Sea. Then they get out there. When they get there, and just think about how impressive. This is on Moses' resume. What's on your resume? Like, well, I parted the Red Seas once. He gets to meet God face to face, and his face is so shining with the glory of God, they have to cover it because it's creeping everybody out. He gets to go up. He's the one who gets the Ten Commandments. He even breaks them, and they get another one. Like, that's crazy. Like, he's got such a relationship with God. When he dies, God's like, hey, I'm going to bury you. God buries Moses. When God does your funeral, you're a big deal. So in the face of all of that, Moses had died, and the baton of leadership's like, here you go, Josh. Take it easy, man. Like, oh. So in this, I just want to say, I think one of the reasons that God says be strong and courageous because he knows what's going on in Joshua's mind. And this is the first enemy. I think it's one that we all face with courageous doubt, and Joshua in the story does too. It's self-doubt. It's self-doubt. That's why God says be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. And we've seen this kind of big shoes to fill in our culture recently. Think Carson Wentz and Nick Foles, right? In November, Vegas betting odds, before Carson Wentz, the QB for the Eagles, was injured, 4-1 odds for them to win the Super Bowl. At the beginning of January, when it was clear he was not coming back and Nick Foles, backup QB, was going to take it, the Vegas betting odds had them winning 9%. So if you made that bet, you made a lot of money. Not saying you should, just saying you did. And that's the reality. That's like, can you imagine the tremendously huge shoes to fill on the national stage? And to an extent, this is what, even more so, this is what Josh is experiencing. Big shoes to fill, big pressure. And then I thought, the other thing, you got to think about in the back of your mind, all the things that would be fueling the self-doubt too. Moses, for all of his impressive resume and pedigree, for all of it, at the end of his life, he made a mistake. And when God punished him, said, there's going to be consequences for your mistake. You can see the promised land, but you can't enter it. Okay, you're my guy, Moses, but you made a mistake, and that's the consequences of it. And if you're Joshua, you got to think, for all of what Moses did that was awesome, he didn't get to go into the promised land. And if you're Joshua, that self-doubt starts to creep in. What makes me think I'm any different? What makes me, if Moses couldn't do it, what makes me think I can? That's a challenge. And it's natural. And I think God knows that's what he's dealing with. And it's a completely natural response. That's why God says, be strong and courageous. Did you hear what I promised? Haven't I called you out? Don't be afraid. And everybody has self-talk. What does your self-talk say? Right? Where is it telling you that you're a failure? Is it in your marriage? Is it with your kids? See, our culture says that if you work hard and do the right thing, if you'll work hard, you'll get where you want to be. But some of us have worked real hard and we aren't where we want to be or where we think we should be. And have we concluded we're failures? See, where has the enemy declared that you are unqualified and you've bought the lie? Where have you thought of a next step in your spiritual journey, but you think God couldn't use someone with a past like mine? See, self-doubt, it's pernicious. And that's why I think God arms Joshua with a very specific weapon. Here it is. It's a surrender. It's a surrender of fear to faith in God's promises. That's what God calls Joshua to. Look at verse 1-3 in Joshua. It says, I have given you, this is before he ever commands him, he says, I have given you every place where the sole of your foot treads, just as I promised Moses, the promise, right? Surrendering fear to faith in God's promises. And then look what he does. He says, haven't I commanded you, be strong and courageous, do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Even that last half is a promise. And I love that, because when you look at this, we see that God makes a promise before he makes a command. God always says, I'm going to do this, and I'm asking you to do this. I'm commanding you to do this. And that word commanding is like, haven't I set you apart? Haven't I distinguished you? Haven't I given you a special appointment? Haven't I called you to this? Be strong and courageous, Joshua. The promise always comes first. And that's the reality. It's like you and I, we have to have a courageous faith that's built on the promises of God. And sometimes we have a faith, even courageously so, that's not founded on God's promises. And if that's the case, you and I are set up for your failure, really. You and I are set up for failure, or at the best, frustration. Because if you and I expect something from God that he hasn't said he would do, we're setting it up for unmet expectations and frustration. And lots of people give up in that gap between what they believe God said and what he actually promised. So that's what we always talk about. We want to be a people that lets God write his own job description. And in the pages of the Bible, in the pages of Scripture, he has said all that he is and what he will do. He has made those promises. Let God write his own job description. And you and I, we have to surrender our fear to faith in God's promise, because that's what God is calling Joshua to do. And when you and I do that, what we take is the first step towards courageous faith, and that's what shapes the stories that our legacies are built upon. So as we continue with the story, Joshua explains to the Israelites the command he's been given. And he says, pack it up, pack it in. Let us begin. Okay, 3 days' time, we're heading out. We're heading out, and we're going to go take that land. And then, so this is just, if you're not sure of the context, let me share it a little bit with you. Because this is a tense moment. Because Joshua's just received a command of God, and now Joshua has to go rally these millions of people. These 2 million people, and take them with him. Now, how will the people respond? And here's why it's a tense moment. Because when Moses did this about 40 years earlier, they said, no, we won't go. And so they were punished. They wandered in the desert. They got stuck in the desert for 40 years. And if you're Joshua, you got to be thinking, how are people going to respond? What's this going to be like? This is tense. And here's how the people responded. And I think it's powerful. They answered Joshua, everything you have commanded us, we will do. And everywhere you send us, we will go. And this is an insight in our teaching team we got together. And one of the insights that came out, do you see how cool this is? This is a generation of people departing from the faith of their family. The faith of their parents, the faith of the generation before them was one of disobedience and a lack of faith. And what they are doing is they are abandoning that, and they are absolutely building a new legacy of faith that they will pass on to their kids and their kids, 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 like a Dr. Seuss book. This is what they're doing. They're abandoning the faith of the generation before them and headed forward. And Joshua is the one to lead the charge. So Joshua, he surrenders fear to faith in God's promises. He takes it up, and the people set out, and they start to go. So they pack up, and they start heading to Jericho to face that wall, impenetrable city that had scared them so bad, intimidated them so much, that 40 years before, they'd rather wander in the desert than take it on. And so they reach the edge of the Jordan, and the Jordan at this time is about half mile wide and about 10 feet deep in some places. It's a flood time, so that's about what it was. And God had told Joshua, when you get to the Jordan River, let the Ark of the Covenant go first. It's where my presence is chosen to dwell. Let the Ark go first, and when you get to the Jordan, I'm going to let you walk through on dry ground. I'm backing up the waters in one giant mass. And sure enough, that's what God says he'll do. Banking on the promises, surrendering fear to faith in God's promises. Joshua moves forward, brings the ark forward, and that's exactly what happens. The water backs up in a mass for about 10 miles, and the 2 million people cross forward on dry land. And the other thing I think is, like, there were people before they got to Jericho that were ready to fight them as soon as they crossed over the Jordan. The Jordan was like that war line. And when they cross it, the people see how they cross with the water standing up en masse. They just like, we surrender. We're done. this is quite a tactic. We give up, you know. Clearly, you have a God that's with you, and I don't know who it is, but this guy's powerful. Right? That's what happens. They cross over. It's just as God said it would go. And then as they cross over, what Joshua does is he tells, and here's the other thing I think that's really, really cool, too, that came out and popped on our teaching team, which is just fun to study text with our teaching team. But in this story, the first time that Israel's ever called a nation is after they cross the Jordan. Before that, they're the people of Israel, but after that, they're the nation of Israel. And I think that's just kind of cool that when you and I trust God in faith, that's what carves out a new identity for us. So Joshua and the people, the nation of Israel, they camp on the outskirts of Jericho, on the plains there, ready to take the Passover because it's a Passover time. And one of the things they do as they cross the Jordan is Joshua commands 12 stones from each of the tribes to be placed in the middle of the Jordan, these memorial stones. And the reason that he does it is that someday your kids are going to say, why are those rocks there, Dad? And you're going to be like, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story that endures for generations and generations. Because this is going to be a story of my faithfulness, God saying, that you're going to build legacies of faith upon. So they do. And those stones are there. After the Passover, Joshua leads a crew of about 40,000 armed men ready to take the city of Jericho. Imagine they have some kind of battle plan. We don't really know what it is. The text doesn't say. But they've got some kind of plan, and they march across the plains of Jericho. Joshua, in his 80s now, leading a crew of 40,000 men, and he's about to have an unexpected encounter. Let's read in on that. When Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and he saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua approached him and asked, "Are you for us or for our enemies?" So build the mental picture. Joshua runs up to me. When a sword is drawn, this guy, the stranger they meet on the road, is ready for battle. The stranger on the road is ready for battle. And Joshua runs up to meet him for battle. Because either it's kind of like, and Joshua asks a very basic question, "Are you for us or are you against us?" Because if you're for us, then we're going that way. And if you're against us, well, I got 40,000 men and I'm coming at you now. And so this, we're going to throw down, okay? But make up your mind, kind stranger on the road, or not kind stranger, stranger on the road, because are you for us or are you for our enemies? There's no neutrality. The battle lines have been drawn. This is what Joshua is asserting. And that's why the stranger's response is so funny. And he said, "No. Are you for us or are you for our enemies?" "No." If you're Joshua, you're like, "Well, that wasn't one of the options." You know, like, I'm a little bit perplexed. And this is what the stranger says. He says, "No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come. Now I'm here." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped him and said, "What does my Lord say to his servant?" The commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, "Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did so. And I want to just tell you who I think this stranger is. Because angels in the Bible, if this is an angel, angels aren't, they're prohibited from receiving worship. In fact, in the Bible, when an angel begins to be worshipped by another person, they say, no, we're creatures just like you. But this one, because this one takes worship because this one is God. I believe this to be Jesus before he came in a human body. Right? This is Jesus. Joshua meets Jesus on the road. And I love that. Are you for us? Right, Joshua, basic question. Are you for us or are you for our enemies? No. I'm here and I'm taking the city. So the real question, Joshua, is are you on my side? Are you with me? This is critical. And I think this is the second enemy of courageous faith. If the first enemy is self-doubt and we bank on the promises of God, then the second enemy of courageous faith is self-reliance. This, I can handle this on my own. This is something that came out in our teaching team, and Pastor Randy was sharing a book that he's reading. It's called Reimagining the Way You Relate to God, and I just want to step aside and let you see this, because when we're talking about, that's the cool thing about courageous faith, is I think rather than come through a series of striving, it actually comes through surrender. So in the world is a dangerous place. Sin has entered, it's just a dangerous place, and there is a response to that danger, that's fear, right? And remember, courage is not the absence of fear, it's just moving forward in spite of fear. And so in the face of a dangerous world, the response is fear, but with that fear, you and I have two responses. One is to try and control things, but ultimately that control, because we're not as good as God is at controlling circumstances, it leads to more danger. But if you and I will surrender, surrender is what leads to faith, and faith is what leads to safety in the promises and security of God. See, control and self-reliance, the response isn't a faith. That's the response that says, I can handle this. And what you and I have to be willing to do, we have to ask ourselves, am I willing to surrender when my life doesn't mesh with my vision for it? When my life doesn't mesh with what I think it should be? And so many times I'm tempted to ask the question, God, are you with me? God, are you with me? Are you with them? God, are you with me? Are you with them? And God's like, that's the wrong question, Justin. Are you on my side, is what he asks. Are you willing to follow me? In my self-reliance, Jesus calls me to surrender. Because if I seek, and that's for us, if we seek God and his kingdom first, all these things will be added to us. At the same time, we get to go after God, and we get to experience him with us. And he has our best in mind. So that's the second enemy of courageous faith, that when Joshua meets Jesus on the road, that's what he sees. It's just this self-reliance. Joshua's got 40,000 men, we're going to take the city. And that's imagine the question you ask Jesus, are you with us or are you against us? Jesus is like, no. Are you on my side? Wrong question. and that self-reliance has been confronted. But let's see how Jesus is going to arm Joshua to get through it. So here's what Jesus says to Joshua. He says, I've handed the city into your hands. The battle is won. I've handed the city. Its fate is sealed. So take the ark, some priests with trumpets. Okay, you got 40,000 armed men, armed to the teeth. And you're going to take some priests with trumpets, and you're going to march around the city one time a day for 6 days. On the seventh day, don't forget, you're going to do it seven times. Blow on the trumpets. And then at the very end of that, there's going to be a mighty trumpet sound. When you see that, start running towards the wall because the walls are coming down. You're going to take the city. And if you're Joshua, and that's the command you've been given, it requires some faith to turn around to the 40,000 dudes behind you and be like, all right, guys, come here. All right, so instead of swords, I was thinking maybe we'll roll in with trumpets. What do you think? Sounds like a solid plan. Hey, also, you know, we also had it worked out. I think we were going to go with the element of surprise, but instead, I was thinking maybe we can just blow some trumpets around the city and let everybody know we're there first. What do you guys think? You on board? Sure. You know what I mean? It's not really even a strategy. It's not what battle plan is that? It's a battle plan of faith, and it's a battle plan that the battle belongs to God, and he's already won it. But in faith, right? That enemy of courageous faith is self-reliance, and Josh takes up the weapon. He says this, so Joshua, son of Nun, summoned the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant and have seven priests carry seven trumpets in front of the Ark of the Lord. And he said to the people, move forward, march around the city, and have the armed troops go ahead of the Ark of the Lord. And Joshua spoke to the people, seven priests, they walked in front, and then the Ark of the Lord followed after them. And while the trumpets were blowing, the armed troops went in front of the priests who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard went behind the Ark. He did it exactly the way he was called to. And Joshua, this is kind of cool, but Joshua had commanded the people, do not shout or let your voice be heard. Don't let one word come out of your mouth until the time I say shout, then you are to shout. And I love that. It's like Joshua's like, hey, we're going to obey God. We're going to obey God. But we're also going to be quiet and watch him do what he's going to do. Like, it's kind of like, hey, be quiet and listen. Just lay back. Just sit back. Relax. Thinking like, that's not the way we do battles, Joshua. So the Ark of the Lord was carried around the city, circling it once. They returned to the camp and spent the night there. And that's really what Joshua said word for word. And here's what I think, just as I look at it, what I think is so cool. In Joshua's story in his life, he was given that promise. And he was said, you guys are, he was given the promise that everywhere your foot treads, that's land that you're going to inherit, and you're going to get that land. You're going to win. You're going to inherit that land that I've already given you. That's what God says. And Joshua has the kind of that promise and the end of the story, but he does not have the whole picture. He doesn't know what this looks like and what this looks like and what this looks like and what this looks like. And what he does, and when I look at what Jesus said to Joshua, Jesus told Joshua, you're going to do this for 7 days, but when Joshua tells his people, he takes it a day at a time. Right? It's kind of like, you're going to do this. And so the Ark of the Lord was carried around the city, circling once. They returned to the camp, and they spent the night there. And I think that's so critical, because just as Joshua was experiencing, I have the promise, but I don't have the whole picture, but I'm pursuing and following God one next step at a time, Joshua is saying, okay, as a nation, we're going to do this together, one step at a time. I'm taking you through that too. And so many of us, we want to be where God is, and we want to be in God's will, and the reality is we think it just happens quick, like a moment in time, but it's a series of obedient next steps over the course of a lifetime that take us to the middle of God's will for our lives. And everybody around is watching this happen and play out quietly. What will God do? And probably, though they have to be quiet, that doesn't mean that the self-talk and doubting Joshua's leadership isn't going on. But in the face of self-reliance, really, what Jesus calls Joshua to is something greater. And it's this, it's a surrender. It's surrender control to faith in God's plan. It is so easy for us to want to seek short-term solutions to avoid long-term obedience. Right? We want the shortcuts, because it's hard to go at it for the long haul over a long period of time. That's really hard. Anyone that works out knows that. The other thing that I think is really tough, obedience to God over the long haul and our culture doesn't always mesh with our culture's view of what is logical or wise. And so over time, if you pursue God, at some point you might look foolish by worldly standards or stupid, and they will voice that. And how often can you hear that before you sometimes buy the lie that it is so? That's what I'm saying, long-term obedience is hard. It's not easy. That's why it requires that constant, ever-going surrendering control to faith in God's plan, because the enemy of courageous faith in our lives, one of them is self-reliance. But when you and I surrender control to faith in God's plan, we start to develop a courageous faith, and courageous faith is what shapes the stories that we build our legacies on. So as Joshua surrendered, we see his legacy begin to take shape. And in fact, I told you this is coming from Hebrews 11, but there's only one verse that talks about Joshua in Hebrews 11, and it doesn't even use his name, but here's what it says about his story of faith. It says this: by faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after being encircled by the Israelites for 7 days. The people advanced into the city, each man straight ahead, and they captured the city. And the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame spread throughout the land, because courageous faith shapes the stories that our legacies are built upon. So let's close it out. I'm going to give you two kind of practical next steps that maybe you can begin to do this week. And I just want to encourage you in them, because this is where we've been. We've talked about the first enemy of courageous faith is self-doubt, and the second enemy of courageous faith is self-reliance. And this kind of idea in between, that rather than striving, actually courageous faith comes through surrender. It seems almost counterintuitive, upside down. But courageous faith comes through surrender. And these two surrenders, in the form of these weapons, we surrender fear to faith in God's promises, and we surrender control to faith in God's plan. That's where we've been. Here are two next steps to consider doing. The first is trust actual promises. Let God write his own job description. And in the pages of Scripture, I believe that he's done that. Let him write his own job description and then trust that job description that he's written for himself. The whole book of Joshua, the whole story of Joshua can be summarized with this. It's the answer to a promise. Joshua and the people received their inheritance. That's it. That's the book. That's the whole story. I mean, it's done in faith. They receive it with faith. The word inheritance is used like 60 times. And so what we see is that God had already promised the victory and the inheritance. And so what we see is in the people, they're not fighting for victory. They're fighting from a place of victory. See, and if you're a follower of Jesus, it's Jesus in our place that gives you and I the right to become children of God. We've exercised that right to become his children, and we lay claim to the inheritance of a life with Jesus that starts now and lasts forever. And there's peace in there, and there's rest in that, and there's joy in that, and there's real true life in that. See, that's the promise. We trust the actual promises of God. And if you haven't made a decision to follow Jesus, if this isn't where you're at, the reality is you can do that today. Perhaps it's not where your legacy has been, but it could be where it's headed. This is what Jesus says straight from in the middle of his life. He says this: everyone the Father gives me will come to me, and the one who comes to me I will never cast out. For this is the will of my Father. This is God's plan, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day. You see the story. The one who had the sword drawn and was asking the question, are you with me, is the same one who would lay down on that sword, putting his life on the line for us. And he would ask pretty much the same question: are you with me? Will you follow me? Will you trust me? See, that's powerful. That's the gospel. That's the good news. You have the opportunity to follow Jesus if you would let us know that you did that today. Use the card to let us know so you don't have to walk that path alone or feel like you are. And there is a fear that our legacy is sealed in a moment in time, but that is absolutely not true. Our legacies are really actually shaped over the decisions and choices we make over a lifetime. And there's hope in that, because it's not a moment in time. It's not what you did, but it's what you have the opportunity. You can start it fresh right now. You can start it new right now. There's hope there. So that's the first thing, the next step. Trust the actual promises of God. The second is leave memorials that define your legacy. We see the people of Israel do this, the 12 stones. Leave those memorials. When I'm talking about memorials, I'm talking about those things that you leave behind and those things that you lay aside. The things that you leave behind are values. Think about the things that you leave behind being like positive. What are the values that you're, what are the stories, right? Our values are based upon the stories that our families, our kids, generations after us tell about us. What are your stories? What are you passing on? What are you leaving behind? Where will your kids say, I always do this thing because I saw my dad do fill in the blank and I knew that he valued it. That's the thing. What are we leaving behind? When I think about my dad And one of the legacies of faith he left me, I remember being 10 or 11, and us McPeaks, we're not very tall or super strong, so we opted for baseball as the sport, okay? Okay, so we did that, and every Sunday was kind of like a baseball day. We had doubleheaders. And I remember being 10 or 11, and my dad was really involved in our local church, and so one of the things he was responsible for was visiting widows and doing benevolence and serving people that way. And so he would take me with him, like, after the games, and I'm a 10 or 11-year-old boy, so I wasn't whipped into a frenzy about it. Like, oh, this is great. He was like, can't we just go home? You know, like, 10 or 11-year-old boy, not my proudest moment. But I'm so glad that he did, because what I saw was a man who loved the local church, who loved Jesus and loved the local church. And that was something that I see it now clearly, but in the moment, I was kind of a jerk. When I was 17, the similar story, my dad went to, my family, we moved so they could be part of a church plan. And I was so bitter because I was moving 30 miles away from all my relationships. And when you're 17, you're like, these are my friends forever. No, they're not. They never are. Okay? I need to be upfront with you. So I was like, I'm going to leave them all behind. Like, no. But when we were talking about it, it's kind of like, this is what we need to do. We want to be involved in the community. We want to be involved in that church. That was just powerful stuff. Now, again, I didn't get it, but looking back, I'm like, man, what a cool legacy of a love for Jesus and a love for his church, willing to lay things down and surrender things to it. What are you leaving behind? What are you leaving behind? What are you laying aside? What are the addictions that God has defeated in your life? The strongholds of sin that you get to look back on and you get to tell your kids, not that they're your past and their marks, but it's like, hey, that was part of my past, but look at God's faithfulness. Look what he did. Look what he did. Look what I laid aside. Look what I got to lay aside. Look what is no longer part of my life. See, these memorial stones, they're the choices that we make, and they produce the stories that define our legacy. And they're not a memorial to our past, but they're a memorial to his faithfulness that we have decided to build our future upon. So just, what are you leaving behind? Everybody leaves something behind, good or bad, and you have the opportunity to determine what it is. Because your legacy, there's the fear that it's already been determined in a moment, but it's really built upon a lifetime of decisions. And if you're not happy with the way yours looks today, you can start fresh. That's the hope, that's the encouragement, and that's the good news. So just consider trusting in the actual promises and leaving memorials that define your legacy and exercising a courageous faith built through surrender.